Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Anything you want me to not ask?
No.
No, go.
Ask anything. This is fun.
Hello, I'm Beth Morrie, and this is One Torn Every Minute, the podcast where we talk about giving birth. Today, I'm joined by the just gorgeous writer and broadcaster Julia Rayside. Julia.
Hello.
Let's start by summarising how many times you have given birth and when.
I have done it once.
Okay.
So I'm an expert, so just ask me anything. And it was 10 years ago to a small man called Douglas.
How lovely.
Yes.
Now, usually at this point, I ask you to name your favourite child so that we can talk about that particular birth. But
it might be somebody else's. You never know.
I'm not sure you'd be very clued up on those births. But
it is Douglas. It is Douglas.
Oh, well, let's go for Douglas's
birth. He's actually great.
That's good to know.
This was worth it.
I'm glad.
In the end, if you get a Douglas, you should totally do this because it is like he's excellent.
Hang on, I didn't get a Douglas. I feel like I missed out.
No, you did. You did miss out. Sorry.
Oops. So let's cleave open your cervix and begin at the beginning.
So I'm just breathing.
So we're 10 years ago.
I'm back there. Whoa.
It doesn't take long.
Quick. No.
We're going to relive it all.
Okay.
So let's take you back. Are you full term pregnant? Did you get
yes,
to the end?
Yes, I did. I was massively overdue to the point where they started to talk about, interjecting and doing things and sticking things in me. So I think I was 10 days overdue. And I had a friend who'd given birth to all of her babies in France who was saying, no, 41 weeks.
Yeah, they wait a lot longer, don't they?
Exactly. So I was I wasn't militant about no interventions, but I was a bit do I have to? So I think I actually, that's right. It was like a film. My waters broke in bed one morning. I think it was the morning they were going to induce me or the morning before they were going to induce me.
So that's nice timing. You just
squeezed
it in.
Brilliant timing. It's almost like he heard and was like, okay, fine.
Also, I love that waters breaking thing because
it was funny.
It's quite dramatic. And I said to everybody at work, don't be silly. It's not like on Sex and the City where it just empties out onto the floor and then
as
you're
if.
In labour.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened to me.
Yes, exactly me too. In fact, there was one friend I had at the time who's just one of those annoying people. She'd just given birth a bit before me and was like, you have to get this special cover for your bed in case your waters break. I was like, for God's sake, will you just leave some things to chance? Obviously, just wrecked a mattress by, like a cart horse, I think my husband said. But so I kind of was in bed and I rolled over and sort of started laughing. So I was like, it's like weeing, but you can't stop. And
he's like, it's weird, isn't it?
Oh my God. Yeah, it was a very strange feeling, but kind of not unpleasant, just like really odd. And so I somehow managed to run down the corridor in our flat and just stood in the bath going, well, it's still coming. And it's like emptying out of just a really large container. It doesn't seem to want to stop. And so eventually I was like, right, it's stopped. I suppose we ought to go to hospital.
So but you hadn't had any pain or anything like that?
No contractions or anything like that. Just literally water's gone. So I guess it just felt a bit odd. And like, so there's no liquid in there now. So it's just baby and then air. Like, what should we? Genuinely, my biology is so bad. I was like, Can he still? Well, I didn't know it was a boy there. I was like, can it still breathe? This is fine, isn't it? sort of realised it was fine. And all the practice we'd done, my husband was a very nervous driver at the time and he hadn't driven for years and years and years. But he sort of had practice driving in order to do the hospital run, which is, about sort of 15, 20 minutes from our house. I live in East London. And I thought it would be a bit of a, oh God, there's speed bumps literally in every row between my house
that.
And the hospital.
And it's so painful.
It really is. Although I think I didn't really notice, but I suppose because we were overdue, it all felt quite sedate, like we sort of just...
Well, if you're not contracting or anything, then
exactly.
It's okay.
Yeah, and I'm trying to remember, it's funny because the time fudges, doesn't it, in your head and you can't quite remember the order things happened in. I think we phoned the hospital first, that's right. And I think they told us not to come in unless contractions started, but I'm not 100% sure if that's right. But I feel like there was definitely some time where we watched a movie and ate sandwiches, and I sat on a kind of, you know, one of those kneeling stools for your posture because it rocked backwards and forwards. So I was just sitting on that.
Like a
and
ball, but.
Yeah, exactly. Same and I effect. Must have started to contract then. It was just my what I sat up onto type when I was working at home. But so I have a memory of like there's, in fact, I took a picture of us both, which is a weird thing to do. Again, it feels weirdly calm, doesn't it? Sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. Before the storm, like, there's almost a moment where you think, well, this childbirth lark is actually quite easy. I don't know what all the fuss is about.
Yeah. yeah, but kind of. And it was, so nothing was really happening. I think contractions were starting, but they weren't close together. And they were a bit sort of, oh, no, okay, back to normal again now. So yeah, my husband made some sandwiches. And I remember we watched a Douglas Sirk film. And maybe that was because I didn't know I was having a girl or a boy. We had thought about more boy names than girls. And we had come up with Douglas. But it was a weird coincidence, I think.
So
but maybe it just cemented that in my head. Like, oh, Douglas, yeah, I like that. So we're watching a big gay Douglas Sirk film. It was lovely, lovely times. And then eventually I think the contractions must have gotten a bit much. So I said, let's go. And I got there and...
But so, no, hang on, I want to stop there okay. Because... The contractions getting a bit more.
A bit much. They're a bit much.
A bit much. This is a kind of issue
when
you go to all your pregnancy and birthing classes because they give you very strict instructions about when you're allowed to go to the hospital.
Yes.
And so then you get slightly into a tiz about measuring them and making
sure. How do you know, really?
Yes, because everybody's different and people experience things differently. So when you say it was a bit much, what was your...
I think they were, maybe they were getting closer together, still not alarmingly close, but we could see them progressing. And it felt like a fairly, not speedy maybe, but over a couple of hours, it was like, oh no, this is definitely different now. And I think I still have somewhere, I found it the other day, there's a little piece of notepaper from a small notepad that we used to keep on the fridge for shopping lists in the kitchen. And my husband had just written down times of contractions, just one after another, just to see the gaps. They were definitely closing up, so it's like, oh, okay. I don't know. I'm guessing he probably decided because I was a bit like, oh, I don't know. It all seems fine. No, it seems fine again. Now let's just watch the rest of the film. I think at some point it must have just become obvious that the pain was quite stabby, which is, it kind of is, you know, I suppose when you're getting quite near to getting ready to give birth. And so I didn't want to leave it till, you know, I was going,
you were
gonna, oh my
give
God,
birth
I can't
in the car
walk.
Park.
Exactly. So I think by the time we got to hospital, I felt okay, able to walk in, you know, but then sitting in that waiting room, and it was very busy. It was, so it's July 2009, and at the time it was quite scary. People forget this now. There was a big bird flu epidemic throughout the land. Bird flu was a big
Well,
maybe not an epidemic, but there were instances of it where there shouldn't have been.
It wasn't an epidemic, but everybody was worried it was going to become one.
Exactly. So there were lots of, no, epidemic is wrong. See, the tabloids do their work on you, don't they? So there was lots of fear mongering about the fact that cases had been reported in this country.
And people started wearing like masks around town and things.
Some odd people did. But so we ended up in this waiting room, and there was a very, a TV in the corner of the waiting room, the hospital waiting room. It's at Whipps Cross in London, East London. Very busy hospital, lots of people in the kind of labour bit, the labour ward, and the little TV, and it was mostly snow. It was a very bad signal, but it was showing BBC News Channel, and BBC News Channel flashed up a picture of a hospital and a headline saying, woman dies, and she'd just given birth in this hospital, and suspected bird flu. And it was the hospital I was sitting in.
Oh, my God.
So that was super. Again,
that's like the beginning of a dystopian thriller.
It was completely like something terrible was going to happen. And so, you know, this awful thing had happened. Again, the chemicals that are pumping through you, I think I just went, oh, that's, well, it's not ideal, is it? But kind of didn't freak out. I think my husband must have just been like white knuckles and like, you know, bleeding, like we'd bitten inside his cheek with the stress. And so we just sort of sat there a bit longer. And then I think somebody must have eventually seen me. It was a really busy, there weren't enough people to look after us all. Someone finally did sort of examine me and they said, oh, you're only, you know, what? Always the way when you feel like, no, literally,
your
my cervix is like 17 feet wide.
2 centimetres dilated.
They were like, you've barely begun. You're about 1.5 centimetres, 2 centimetres. Like, oh, man alive.
Okay, yeah, I was fine. Sensing that. Happens to us all.
Exactly. You've been waiting all this time. Then you're overdue. Then it's like, it's that slow down, hurry up, slow down. It's just, it's really frustrating after a while, especially when you get near to the big end moment. So I think it was decided that we should go home.
I mean, presumably we were glad to get out of the hospital where bird flu was about to run amok.
I was a bit. But then I think by the time it was conveyed to me that I should go home, I was like, well, the contractions are so close together now that I don't know if I'll make it all the way to the car park before the next one. So is that still, should I still, are you sure I should? They, like, you're not dilated enough. You should just go home. So I was kind of, I think I was a bit grumpy by then.
Yes.
And I think eventually, just because there were so few people to kind of monitor us all, they kind of just missed me again for a half an hour or so. And by the time they came back, I was really like in a lot of pain and there was no pain relief or anything because no anaesthetist, obviously. And so I was just sort of, you know, quietly losing my mind. And I think my husband was sort of acting as a bit of a firewall between me and anyone he'd get hold of if they were able to stop by the, you know, the door of the ward I was in. And just sort of not telling me what they were saying, which is like, I think at one point I realised I was lying back on a bed, just the iron railings of a propped up bed. There was no cushion behind me, there's nothing, just metal. I was like, do you think we could have a pillow? And apparently he asked for a pillow and they just laughed at him and walked away. So he didn't tell me that. He just said, I'll just roll up my coat, it'll be fine. So, you know, you just at that point, I think you're out of your body and you're just kind of, you cope with things as they come. And then I remember someone said I could try gas and air, and I was like, oh, gas and air, that's like being stoned, apparently that sounds nice, I'll do that. And then I literally had about two puffs on it and just went, I'm gonna throw up. So decided I wasn't going to do that. So just sat there with nothing.
You know that is a thing where you have to be taught to use gas and air.
Yeah, someone should have helped me to toke that stuff.
And I did not know that. So first time round, I had the same thing. This isn't doing any good. This is rubbish.
Just
second
felt
time
really
round,
nauseous.
Someone showed me how to use gas and
air.
Oh,
now I'm annoyed.
And it's great.
Because I love drugs. I've missed out on a really good one now.
And
that's
gas
so
and air is really, because it feels a bit natural somehow.
Yeah.
And if you're using it right, it's very helpful. But if you're not, it's useless.
Like now I do like Pilates and things. I know how to breathe through things a bit better. Like I think I was fighting the gas and air, and that's the problem, isn't it? Like drugs, you need to just allow them into your
system. Yeah, let them
system.
In.
Yeah. So no, I was probably a bit too het up by then. There was a strong sense of the people who were there were brilliant, but they were so hassled and busy and they didn't have time to sort of stand around and listen. They did what they could, but they were so overworked. It was just crazy.
And there's that sense that I'm getting from lots of people that I've talked to that for them, it's every day, it's mundane, it's quite boring.
Mm.
And
which is strangely reassuring sometimes.
Yes.
You think, oh, this is good, you're not making it. It's like being on a plane, I guess, the air stewardesses aren't freaking out, even though you're like in a big tube in the sky, and that's wrong. So it must be normal and fine. So in a way that helps.
But not normal and boring for you. So it's very much at odds, the experiences.
Yes, it definitely is. And then I think, I mean, God, you know, labour, it just sort of went on a bit. And then I had a sense of being moved from different
rooms.
That's
the most British way. Labour. It just sort of went on a bit.
I mean, it did.
One doesn't like to moan.
Oh, I bloody moaned, all right. I mean, yeah, you do, don't you? Because you don't care. But at that point, my desperate need to be liked left the building. When I was just like, it hurts, it really hurts. Can anyone hear me? My husband did his best. You know, I was never really like a birth plan person. I think I thought I was being like super cool and realistic by going, oh, don't be silly. Look, it's not my wedding day. I'm just going to get this baby out of me and into the world. And however that's done, I'm going to be fine with, because it's not about.
Which is true. But did you have a secret birth plan?
I think I just thought at the minute I don't like the pain, I will have all the drugs.
That's a really good birth plan.
That was my only thing. That didn't work out because you need anaesthetists for the good drugs, like the really big heavy hitters. And the epidural I dreamt of secretly, it wasn't actually a secret. I was just like, I'll take it whenever. I have no precious need to feel the baby being ripped from my loins. just that no anaesthetist was available. It was a busy East London hospital. My husband said he talked to one midwife who just said, look, you're basically middle class. You probably, the odd salad, like there are other people here who just need a lot more intervention. And I was like, I should be flattered by that, but give them to me.
So you didn't miss out, because some people kind of go too late and then by the time they want the epidural, they're just too far along. So
you
could have had it. It's just that there was no one available to give it to you and no drug available.
No, exactly. There were a lot of people giving birth that day and clearly the hospital was, you know, in a bit of a state anyway, what with being on the news and that. So, it was all just a bit make, do and mend. And, you know, I think I sort of expected that. I wasn't, you know, the queen giving birth by sighing in Buckingham Palace. I was, you know, we're all just in the same sausage factory. That's very much how it felt.
Inherent thought that at least you didn't have bird flu, so you
yeah, no.
To
at
be
that
just
stage,
grateful.
I was like, at least I seem to be healthy. This is all good. So no, I was, you know, fine, just muddling through. I'm not that brave a person. I just don't think you're really that present Once it all gets going, you're in it. Something curious happens, doesn't it?
Yeah. Talks it's very a lot outside about, time.
Completely. There's Griefcast, you know, the other end of this delightful spectrum, and talked often about the parallels, and Carrie Ann does on her podcast about the parallels between life and death. And there's some otherness state that seems to descend at the beginning, at the end of life, where you're just sort of not really quite here, and it helps massively. Just really, really
helps. Do you think that's why? And you don't totally forget, but there is an element of forgetfulness about it, which which is why people end up doing it again. Because if you didn't forget, then you probably would only have one child.
Yeah.
Everyone would.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's yes and no. I think it's a day. I mean, obviously, what hits you straight after giving birth, the parenting bit, is so much more overwhelming and ongoing.
Oh, yeah.
To this day.
That is a whole different podcast.
Exactly. Than the one day where they kind of rather traumatically sort of came from your insides to your outsides. It's strange. I think looking back on it, looking forward to it, it seemed like the most important day. And actually, there have been many more. Without sounding too cheesy, it was just a day. Mm. And I know for some people it can be a couple of days, or one of my friends, I think, which is about 96 hours in labour. It just sounded like hell. It's a thing that happens.
It can be 3 days, but it's a finite amount of time.
It is finite. And it can leave you traumatised, and you can, you know, if bad things happen. Or I was reasonably lucky, I think, in terms of the length of time it took and how badly things went wrong. It wasn't so bad. It was just like, I'm underplaying it. I mean, I'm not. There was no like life and death thing, but you know, it's not fun. You wouldn't like book an experience on Red Letter Days, have this happen to you.
And I will, as we've discussed, I have come across people who do think it's fun, but...
We know who you're talking about. She's weird. I love her, but she's bloody weird.
Most of us don't find it fun.
No.
Hello, my darlings. It's me, Anna Mann, actress, singer, welder. Gotta have a backup. I've been in everything, my darlings, and I've been cut from most things. However, I will not be cut from one thing, and that is my own podcast, Talking to Actors with Anna Mann, where I meet those rarest of creatures, the actors. That's Talking to Actors on The Great Big Owl.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
So, where were we? You were at the point where you can't have an epidural because there are no drugs and no people to administer said epidural.
No anaesthetist.
Couldn't think of anything, because I had pethidine, which we've worked out in another conversation is heroin.
It is heroin.
And Hooray!
My time, let me tell you, my time on horse was spectacular. The best, I think in the end it was about, spoilers, it was about a 14-hour labour, which to me sounds about
quite
right.
Quick.
Yeah, exactly. So it's 14 hours in hospital, and I think about 9 hours in, someone popped by and found me and said, do you want this heroin? And I was like, heroin? That sounds like the best lifestyle choice I could make right now. So they gave me heroin, and it was, I don't know how you, have you had the good horse, the good smack?
Well, I mean, I had pethidine first time round.
Do you remember it?
Not really.
So I really remember it, because I think
was
it was
an
first
injection in the leg?
can't remember where it went in. It was definitely an injection.
I don't really remember it, which irks me, because if I've had heroin, I really, really, really want to remember
it. How are you going to write that novel about, you know, that guy who's on heroin if you can't? But I think I remember it just because it was such a bold contrast to the 9 hours of absolutely nothing that I'd had up till then. It's like the pain is happening in another room. You can feel it, but you're just fine with it because it's not really happening to you.
That's great.
It's amazing, dissociative, wonderful. Like, I don't want to encourage people to take heroin, but I'm guessing it's great.
Well, no, I've heard that it's not the same hit because you're in such amount of pain.
Yeah.
It only takes you up to a certain level, whereas heroin usually works by you're at the normal level and then it
makes you feel
euphoric.
So it's
not quite the same. But
no.
You seem to have had a really good experience with
it. I had a really good experience with it to the point, obviously, where,
you now want to take heroin.
Well, I mean, luckily, it didn't quite lead me to the gutters with the needles, the paraphernalia. But I did, I think about however long it lasts, 2-3 hours, I think it wore off and I was like, can I have some more? And they were like, yeah, no.
Oh, because you were only allowed one hit.
Well, they said, I think obviously by then I must have been fairly dilated. They just said, oh, look, that we can't because the baby will come out of sleep. I'm like, babies like sleeping. Babies like sleeping. Give me my drugs.
This is win-win.
Seriously now. It's like, oh, we don't want to because it's like, oh, fine. Think of the baby. Don't think of me. Is this how my life is now? So, no more heroin for me. I just had one lot. But it was lovely and I'll always remember it fondly. I really will. And then I can't, again, I was on heroin. It was hazy for a bit. But I remember just the pain being not fun, but not nearly as troubling as it had been. And then just like things like, I guess when the baby was, he was sort of turning around and his head must have been going down towards the right place. Really, really wanting to go to the toilet like so badly. And
that's a sign, isn't it?
I think so.
I don't remember.
Wanting to bear down is basically
yes,
nature
the same
going.
Thing.
Oh, no, squat, could use gravity. Obviously, in hospitals, they make you lie back and it's all... Mm. Is it that thing about Henry VIII wanted to... I don't know. But anyway, it's really unnatural. And I've got a friend who's got a militant midwife who was saying, any position you want to be in is fine, make them... Obviously, by then, I was just like, I do whatever I'm told, I don't care, I'm on
it's
heroin.
It's hard and to assert yourself under those
really
circumstances.
Really hard, yeah. And I just didn't have the fire in my belly that day, so I just sort of did what I was told. But I did... They got like, this is delightful. They sort of put... like a bedpan on a chair and said, do you want to just sit over that for a bit? So I did, nothing was going on. But I think they weren't ready to get me into the birthing room or whatever it's called. So they were just sort of procrastinating.
Were they not ready because you weren't ready or because they weren't ready?
No, they weren't ready.
So they didn't have any space?
I don't think so, no. I did. Again, they're not going to say that to you.
No,
but there was a lot of, well, I mean, you are 10 centimetres, but let's just hang on. So yeah, I think it was the minute somewhere became free, it felt like it was very quick and I was whisked into a room and...
Why couldn't you have given birth in the room you were in?
I don't know. It just felt like there was a place I was waiting, like a bay with a curtain. And then the place where the place I gave birth was a theatre, but that's not kind of quite what happened in the end. But no, there was another room in between. All I remember about that room is being in it suddenly, thinking, oh, this is where it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then a male obstetrician, the first man I'd seen actually, came in and they said, I was pushing and nothing was happening. And that's why I'd started pushing. We fast-forwarded a little bit, but who knows what happened in the interim, I don't know. Definitely started pushing and the pushing was all going quite well. And then it just sort of stopped happening. So Douglas was like head down, was on his way. I think they could sort of see his head. And I was like to my husband, stay this end. He was like, you do not need to tell me. I am staying this end. He was brilliant, actually. Like all through this, he's just a quiet... presence, but he must have been shitting himself. I don't think I'd like to watch this. I was actually, to be honest, would choose to be the person doing this because you just aren't really quite there.
I've got to disagree with you there.
Really,
I
really.
Would choose to be the person.
You
not,
want your
not
husband
doing
to go through this? I think he was almost more distressed watching, especially as things got a bit more panicky and it didn't unfold quite the
Lots
way
Lots of people
hoped.
Have said that they felt tremendous sympathy for their partner
yeah.
watching them in worrying about you and
yeah,
there's nothing
yeah,
they
yeah.
can do. And I absolutely see that,
yeah.
but I did not feel
you don't want
it
to swap
at the place. Time.
Okay, fine.
I was not sympathetic. I was sympathetic for me.
Yes, well, no, quite.
I
mean,
was going
don't get me wrong. If you'd asked me in that moment, I'd have said, cut his balls off, cut them off! Or something like that, like a woman in a sitcom. But so there was pushing, but the pushing stopped. Things just stopped happening and he just stayed where he was.
And do they know why?
Well, no, I think after the fact, this is very self-diagnosing, but I've talked to a couple of people who have similar things. Like I've got weird, overly stretchy joints and I never break bones and there's a kind of hypermobile thing That apparently is a thing, which means one of the things you might not be able to do is effectively push during birth. I had loads of Braxton Hicks contractions when I was in sort of quite late pregnancy. And it feels like you've done like a billion sit-ups. I thought, I'm so hench. Like this baby's going to shoot out. Like I've never had the muscles I can feel. Obviously it's just, you know, Braxton Hicks is not actual contractions. But when it really came to it, I thought I was going to be really great at it and just wasn't at all. Yeah, he just stopped. So I think it was something to do with that possibly, but that's just me diagnosing the reason why I couldn't get my own baby out of my front bottom, as I call it now, just to make my son
we do
cringe.
Have to say the word vagina.
Vagina! And hooray. Clitoris. Just throw that one in as well. Why not? So he was stuck, and obviously they were kind of monitoring him, and they started to get slightly worried that he'd been stuck for a bit too long, and heart rate and things weren't quite right. And so they decided to get me ready just in case I needed a C-section.
Is he not gone too far down the birth canal by that point? Because you were saying that you thought they could see his head.
I think they could see it, but they had to really look up with like a torch on one of those helmets.
We've talked about these cervix exams that being so invasive and painful.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's probably the most pain I felt was being examined in that way.
Yeah, no, I've got a worse one than that. In terms of pain, the only time I really noticed a surprising amount of pain, and this is compared to just like ordinary contractions, which hurt,
yes,
is when the male obstetrician came in. He did two things. He ordered two things. He said he wanted to give me a drug to keep contracting. So I guess it's the one they give you to try and induce you, whatever. So it was a similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was they found a vein in my arm, you know, the back of my elbow, and it was hooked up to a drip. Mm-hmm. The drip was keeping me contracting, and then he catheterized me.
Oh yes.
But he hadn't been told that I had no pain relief. Like I wasn't, but the pethidine had long since worn off. I was just a woman having something shoved up her urethra. And I can tell you more painful than anything else.
Why did nobody...
And literally a nurse just grabbed his hand and went, no, she hasn't got any pain relief. And it was too late. And I was kind of like, the only time I actually screamed like a woman in a cartoon giving birth.
So it was, hellfire.
Genuinely really like someone had set my... like loin area on fire. It was so painful, and like I now know where my urethra is, because I felt every millimeter of that going in.
It was when they take a catheter out as well. They said to me, don't worry, we'll give you a sedative for when we take it out. No, they don't. They tell you to cough. That's their sedative.
I think I remember that now. It's all coming back to me. So anyway, so I had this catheter in, so that's all fine. That means there's like a bag next to your bed filling with wee again. Mm-hmm. Oblivious, don't care, didn't notice it. And then eventually, although I don't remember this, my husband says they just, they were talking about maybe C-section, but they were going to see what they could do. I was contracting like a mother by this point, just like the drug
Thanks
was going in. It was really fierce contractions, no sort of pain relief, that the good drugs had worn off. And they wheeled me into a theatre, suddenly incredibly brightly lit after this very low lit room, which I thought would be a nice place to give birth, into this like just very, very disorientatingly bright room. I think it was like about sort of 5 in the morning or something. By then we'd been there since the afternoon before, and my husband was obviously just shredded with tiredness, and that apparently they handed him scrubs, didn't explain, just said put these on. And so he was just like absolutely, and he said he was, I mean, we don't believe in God in our family, but he was just like saying, just save her, don't worry about the baby, I haven't met the baby, we can make another one, just save her, please don't let her die. I was like, it was fine, Joel, darling, it was fine. Apparently it wasn't fine, but you know, I was pretty oblivious. And then they told me they were going to give me, finally an anaesthetist arrived. Like, so praise God.
Amazing drugs.
Not even just like the drugs I thought I was going to get, like the fast track, you know, you're a Hollywood star, you don't need to feel this anymore.
The A-list drugs.
They gave me a spinal block injection.
Oh, I love a spinal block.
Have you had a spinal block?
Yeah.
Isn't it great? It was so amazing.
It's nicer than an epidural because there's less of a come down and it's more immediate.
I love this. It's like we're comparing recreational. Yeah, there's no come down. It's really clean. It's really sweet high. You just stop feeling. It's freaking
amazing. I would live on a spinal block.
Just when you needed it, you know? It was actually immense. And so this, I remember, again, this is awful. The contrast, again, of my experience and my husband's experience. So he's in the hallway shaking, weeping, trying to put these maroon kind of scrubs on over his clothes. And meanwhile, this incredibly hot Silver Fox Spanish anaesthetist has come in. And he's sort of talking in his beautiful accent. And he's saying, explain it to me. You just need to lean forward, hug this pillow.
There's a pillow now.
There was a pillow now. Yeah, there was. And he said, and obviously I was catheterised. It was all a bit, you know. But he said, just lean forward. It's totally fine. Just stay where you are. Hold the pillow. Make sure you're not contracting first, because we need you to be absolutely still now.
We're going to
put this needle in the back. And obviously the minute he said, right, we're going to put the needle in, I was like, contraction. He's like, can't do anything now. You just have to sit really still. So I was contracting absolutely, just like not moving a muscle. And he said, honestly, it's going to be fine, because any second now you're going to feel. And it was like, oh my God, I can't feel anything. So literally in my head, it was like seconds later, I was flirting with him. I was saying, that's a pretty accent. Where are you from? My husband's coming in going, what's going on? Is everything okay?
No, darling, like, I'm having a wonderful time now.
Fantastic. I remember kind of being, you know, sort of put onto this sort of, you know, bed or whatever. Maybe I was already on a trolley. And then kind of my feet being put up into stirrups, still flirting with the guy. He's looking up me. His colleague certainly was. He may have been at the top end, hopefully. I was just, you know, having a lovely chat with this dreamy man, just clearly not being any way aware of where I was. And then, then they just told me, even though you can't feel, like, just think about pushing. I was like, I'm thinking. I don't know if this is helping.
That's derailed me somewhat. How does that work?
I don't know. They just said, we still need you to try and push. And I was like, so the spinal block, is that like, I don't, like, is it sensation, but my muscles are still wet? Like, how is this? I don't understand what's happening. But again, you don't ask questions. You just
try.
So I thought about pushing. But what they ended up doing, I think, did they try?
So they weren't doing a C-section or anything. They were
no.
just...
No. I think they decided he was far enough down.
Yeah.
And they went in with, like, all the metal hardware. That the stuff that in the... We only did one, like, antenatal class. It was the NHS one.
Mm-hmm,
we decided that people we might meet in some of the other sort of privately run ones might really annoy us, and we just didn't want to go there. So we decided to just not do it. I've had friends who've got great experience with those things, and friends who've had terrible experiences, like horrible competitive people.
We just didn't want to pay £250.
No, exactly. It's a lot of money as well. It played into my thing of it's just one day. We don't need to make a huge fuss and do university calls about it.
It's a piece of
piss. It's totally easy. It's just like they're like a bar of soap. Love making that noise. So I was in feet up, kind of being told to think about pushing, and they got... Did they get the Von too? So I think they did. They did both. They did.
That's the sucky thing, isn't it?
They did the sucky thing, so he had a bit of a cone head.
Yeah.
But they also, God knows how they got all of this up me. I'm so tiny down there. they also used the, what are they called? The calipers? The
forceps.
Metal, the forceps. Yeah. So when he came out, he had a cone head and like a sort of a U-shaped red mark on his cheek.
Ooh, the F word. It's not good. Forceps.
No, it didn't. It felt like...
Well, I mean,
it
didn't feel anything.
Is it good? Well, no, but I felt like... Obviously, by then they weren't really asking; they were just doing it.
Yeah,
get him out. But they, I wonder how great it is for you to be dragged out by your head with some metal. I don't know.
I don't know. It doesn't sound like the least stressful experience.
It wasn't certainly
least
not for my husband.
Least stressful entrance to the world.
Yeah. So it was all very peculiar, and that it went into slow mo a bit then, and it was all a bit strange. And I don't think I was really aware of what they were sticking up there, but you know,
happily,
thank goodness, certainly didn't feel it. At some point, they must have done an episiotomy because there were stitches.
Yes.
We'll come on to the stitches
in
a minute.
Don't worry. I'm all over the tearing nature of the story.
So I wasn't torn. I was definitely snipped. And I remember my Millicent midwife friend Jenny saying, oh my God, no, you must tear. You mustn't.
You're supposed to do it naturally.
I don't like the sound of that.
But I heard both sides. That you tear naturally because it's natural. And also, no, have an episiotomy because it's neat and it will heal more.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, you can knit the edges back together again. Anyway, turns out it depends who sews you up. If it's a medical student, not so much. Funny story. They snipped me, they got everything up there, they dragged him out, and then there's that weird moment where nothing's happening, like on TV, where you're just waiting to get some sign of, and the baby's alive. And then we sort of heard him crying, and that was a bit like, oh, and then somewhat a voice, it's really weird as well, a voice on the other side of the room goes, it's a boy. And we didn't know, so it was kind of amazing.
I feel like that could have been achieved slightly nicer.
It could have been, but to be honest, by then it's just like, news, there's news.
Yes.
We just said, after whatever it is, after whatever this process turns out to be like, let's just have something really cool and new to focus on, apart from the baby. Like, we don't know if it's a he or a she. That'll be the overwhelming thing, to meet him or her. And
to make you forget the snip.
Totally, exactly. By then, obviously, I was still not feeling anything from the waist down, so still quite happy. It was great, because when we were wheeled into the kind of recovery bit, I couldn't change the first nappy, all that sticky meconium stuff, because I simply couldn't stand up.
Yes.
Or even sit up, really.
It's quite helpful, really. Yeah, see what I mean about living on a spinal block?
It was so great. So some nice lady came in and did it for me, like all that green goo. Oh, it's disgusting. But anyway, he was declared a boy. We were all really happy. And then I just remember a pile of sort of green sheets and things being put on me, and then just seeing a foot, like a little purpley red. It was his left. No, it was his right foot. That's right. And I annoy my son wildly by saying sometimes when he's getting ready at night time, like, that was the first bit I saw of you. He's like, I know.
He doesn't care.
He's 10 now. He's like, ugh, don't touch me. Ugh. But it was lovely. It was it was the moment I kind of went, even though a whole new terrifying chapter's about to start. It was
you
the
had
moment
your
I went,
second.
It's happened. Oh my God, we've done it. And then it's that weird thing as well. I don't know if you've had that with your children as well, where you finally get to the face end and you meet your child and you look into your baby's eyes, and we both sort of went, oh, it's you. We know you. We were terrified of who you might be, but you look like us. It's totally fine. And he didn't look like us really, but there was something about him that was instantly familiar, which is weird, but I think sort of lovely, and helps when you're shell-shocked and just completely, you know, you don't know which way's up.
Well, you've got to get something good out of this at the end.
Yes, exactly.
Because otherwise, it would be really quite bad.
It would be a real cheat to go through all of that and then get nothing. But it was an amazing, amazing ending to what was otherwise just a very confusing, painful experience. But the spinal block kind of complicated things a bit. I had still had this drip, this thing in my arm. And after about half an hour in the recovery room, which actually, because again, the hospital was overrun with people and not enough beds and things, I was in like a store cupboard, like a big walk-in store cupboard with just things all over the shelves, medical supplies. And so we were kind of lying there, me on a trolley, my husband, there was nowhere to sit down, but he sort of was by me. Douglas was in like a cot on wheels next to us. And someone offered us, someone said, do you want some breakfast? I was like, I guess so. And they brought me some bread, because health and safety meant they couldn't use a toaster in that part of the building. I don't know. So they brought me some bread and I ate it and then just vomited everywhere, because I think, you know, anaesthetic or whatever.
It's
was
too
just,
much at that point.
And obviously my system must have just been absolutely overloaded with adrenaline and just
drugs.
Just everything, you know. I must have been in such a state. And then I looked down at my arm after a while, which still had the cannula, whatever it is.
Yeah, and they're not still administering.
No, so the drug wasn't
contracting
in.
Drugs.
But no, but I think they just left the cannula in and maybe
in case you wanted to slip in a bit of pethidine.
Obviously, they weren't giving me the good stuff anymore. And I looked down at my upper arm, where the needle had gone in, was just twice as wide as normal. Like, it was just huge. Like, I'd been like Popeye, I'd eaten some, you know, spinach and just gone ga-dong, ga-dong, but just on one side. So it was just absolutely massive. And I just looked down again, sort of a bit dazed, and went, I don't think that's supposed to be like that, is it? And my husband sort of went and got someone. Eventually someone turned up and they looked at me and just kind of did that kind of that micro expression that medical professionals do, where they go, oh fuck, everything's fine, everything's fine. And then they kind of took it all out. And my husband said later that he'd seen, literally, again, this is just, it sounds like a comic conceit, like a label hanging off the drip stand or the drip equipment that was in me, saying don't use after May of that year or something like that.
It was out of date.
Yeah, whatever I was having was like definitely off. So, you know, my arm was the hugest.
Wow. Like,
Jesus Christ. So, you know, I didn't die. That's a mercy. Don't know what that was. Never bothered to find out. Didn't really want to
know.
Did
your arm kind of
deflate?
I
think it did. As soon as they whipped that thing out and, yeah, they must have given me something. I don't know. I still don't know what it was, but
out-of-date drugs is something new.
Or equipment. One or other. So, I mean, God, it's the NHS, that hospital. Just, you know, they're doing their best with bad lack of funds.
There is never a message except that we love the NHS.
Literally amazing people, because the adversity under which they work is just mind-blowing. And just the volume of people they have to be incredibly caring about. And, you know, there were so many of us there that sort of day and night. But yeah, it was then just a period of total dazedness. And then there was like a side room you could have if you paid 100 quid.
Oh, and yeah, I've heard about that.
And I kind of spewed and stuff, and I was just like, and you can't book it or anything. It's just like, if it's free and you want it, you can have it. So my husband was like, oh, special treat. So we got this side room, and it had its own shower. It was really, really amazing. And so just kind of stayed there for a bit. And they weren't letting visitors into the hospital because of the bird flu. Exactly. Or they certainly weren't letting kids in. And I think maybe one, you could have one visitor or something. So my husband's family live quite nearby. And my sister-in-law, Nat, just sort of was really keen to come in and see the new member of the family. So she did come in and sort of gave him a cuddle. And it was really lovely. But I think we were just quite aware that after all the drama had finished, like, we quite didn't want to be there for very much longer because the idea that...
Hospitals aren't fun.
They're not fun. It was on lockdown. This weird situation was going on and just, yeah, I was quite keen to leave. So I think, you know that thing that you have to wait till you've done a poo before you can leave.
Oh, yes. And everybody's on tenterhooks.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous,
it's really
isn't
embarrassing.
It? Yeah.
Every time you go to the toilet.
So I think, and I just, you know, was looking at the food menu, thinking I'm going to have to stay for lunch. Oh, God, I don't want to. I think I was there for a night, actually, in the end, just because I think all the various things that had gone wrong, they were just keeping an eye on me as well, without really saying it. And you're kind of lying there, and, you know, they kind of lie you on a kind of big sanitary towel.
Yeah.
And just stuff
you
leaking.
Just sort of,
and you think,
leak through.
At one point, someone came in to take my food order, like just an orderly, and I was like, do you want to see it? And she's like, no, I just want to know what you want for lunch. Oh, sorry, put the sheet back down.
And somebody kept coming around, because I was in for 4 days, somebody kept coming around and shoving needles in me.
Oh, no.
In my leg. Every now and then, somebody would just walk in, shove a needle in my leg and walk
see
away.
How cross you'd get?
I think it was...
Really cross.
I was too tired.
Tick
to be
really cross.
But I think it was something to do with what's the is it MRSA or whatever?
Yes, yeah.
I think it was a thing against that.
Oh my God.
Back. But I'm so out of it, you know. You just
exactly you are. You're by then you're used to being kind
cushion.
Of a pincushion.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. It's just what goes on, isn't it? It's very strange. They can't leave you alone in hospital for very long. And then someone came in with a lunch menu, this poor woman who I showed probably my vagina to. Sorry. It probably didn't look that great then either. I'm not saying it looks that great
now,
but
I'm sure
but like
it looked
then.
Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you, Beth. And kind of just, I thought the hospital food all looked a bit not nice. You can't go wrong with it. I think I ordered like a cheese sandwich. Like if I can't eat something, just give me a cheese sandwich. It's like the worst cheese sandwich I've ever seen in my life. Like I can't believe you could badly make a cheese. It was awful. So I kind of ate half a cheese sandwich and thought, how am I ever going to poo? This is impossible. Like, I'm not eating anything. This is awful. And by then, I think Doug had... He'd been sleeping a lot after birth. He didn't really wake up much, which after he had his nappy changed off, he just went to sleep. He was golden. And then eventually he did wake up, I think, that night. My husband had to go home. He wasn't allowed to stay.
Yeah, they can't stay overnight, I think.
So at 8 o'clock, he was like, ho-hum, gotta go. Obviously just went out with his mates and had a lovely time. And then came back the next day and had the full English in the hospital canteen while I was lying there.
Oh,
going,
well, it's good that he had a lovely time.
Yeah. He's like, I really recommend the full English. We should come back here and have it just for shits and giggles. It's lovely. It's like, oh, good, okay. Glad you're having a night time. Eventually, I think I must have pooed. And then Douglas did wake up, actually. And I was like, well, I presumably, pointing at my own boobs, I have to do something with these now. And I just remember going to the one antenatal class. There's this very officious midwife who, when someone asked, what if you can't breastfeed or it's really painful or it just doesn't work out? What about bottle feeding? And she just said, well, no, we don't help with that. So I was quite frightened. Like,
wow,
if I
that's
can't
really
make
nice.
These work,
that's helpful.
My son's going to starve. We are fucked.
Formula doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't. It's not a real thing, and you can't have it. It will kill your baby, so don't use it. It was just mad. It was like being told.
You may as well give them gin.
Genuinely, she was so sort of. Oh, it's just awful. It wasn't a nice thing to hear. So I was a little bit like, oh God, right, I have to do this now. And then, you know, thought, well, how hard can it be? Turns out quite hard. And then, but this very. Officious, short, kind of, she was like a yapping dog. This little woman came in who was definitely a midwife because she was wearing the uniform, not like a. I could definitely show my fanny to her. She wasn't coming to take the sandwich order, but I didn't. And I was just like, I'm just. And so she came in and I was just trying to work out how the mouth went on the tit and it wasn't
it's
working.
It's not instinctive, is it?
Didn't quite happen magically as I thought it might do. And then she just sort of very, like, shoved his nose again. And then, but bingo, he was doing it. It was amazing. And they'll get then the exploding breasts. Oh my God.
Oh,
they just
yeah.
explode
when it comes
constantly.
In,
I used to get
nice.
Him in the eye. Like, used to constantly squirt milk in the poor kid's
it's
eye.
Just it's really just really painful.
Really does hurt, doesn't it? Yeah.
Throbbing.
Oh. And I remember once, before I got pregnant, giving a friend a lift somewhere, the baby in the back seat. And then her baby started crying and she was like, oh, and leaning over. I was like, that's a bit much. God, she's making a bit of a big deal out of this. No,
no.
It hurts when it comes. Oh, it's like electrocution. It's horrible. Yeah. And then so feeding all happened. And then we sort of, I think, I don't remember going home. Oh, that's right. No, you had to have a car seat. They
yes.
wouldn't let you leave without a car
that's
seat.
That's true.
So my husband had gone and got a car seat and came back, and then we were like, holy crap, so is this it then? Is no one going to help anymore? Is that it?
No, you just get to do it on your own then.
And that was that. And we haven't killed him yet. Touch wood. Touching wood. There's no wood to touch. Oh, God.
It's a happy ending and it's ongoing.
It is. Literally, it's just one day. Get over it.
If you, thinking about that one day, if you could go back and tell yourself something about that one day, what would be your piece of advice?
I don't know. Ask for pethidine earlier. I don't think I knew that it was an option. Like you said, I think I knew you could have it without, I don't know who administered it, but maybe it's a nurse that does it. I think I just assumed if I couldn't have an epidural, I was just like stuck where I was. I think if I'd known
ask
a bit more,
for the range of drugs.
Ask for the heroin.
Yes.
Don't hold back. Don't be British. Ask for heroin.
That's really good advice. And what I'm going to do with all this advice is I'm going to stitch it onto exquisite little tapestries.
That's a nice idea.
And then I'm going to stamp on them with muddy boots until you can't read them anymore. Because nobody listens to advice.
No.
You don't want to pass it on. You all do it your own way.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for your wonderful birth story.
I want to say it's been a pleasure. Sort of has.
It's been cathartic.
Have you got any heroin?
Thanks for listening to One Torn Every Minute. If you enjoyed it, please rate and review us. See you next week.
GreatBigOwl.com.
All of television history is contained in the Box of Delights.
I've climbed up Nelson's Column once before.
These are small.
And put it down in front of Bagpuss.
I'm Julia Rayside. Join me and my guests as we dip into our favourite TV memories.
Suppose mustn't hesitate, bash my head like this.
You can't tell me what to do, you ain't my mother!
I love when a plan comes together.
Come and tell us what yours are too.
We've all been told we can't discuss nominations.
It's a bit of car area.
Shut up. With a novel on the top.
I think I'm like you, Lovejoy.
Find us on Twitter at Box Delights Pod and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Great Big Owl.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.